I'm Montse Alvarado. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, Push for Peace. President Trump hosts the leaders of Azerbaijan and Christian Armenia in an effort to end a decades-long conflict. We're at the White House. Military force. The president also tasks the U.S. military with a role in fighting Latin American drug cartels. Defending the faith. An update from Bishop James Conley after a disturbing mockery of the Mass at the University of Nebraska. Plus, visit to the doctor. The unlikely ties between Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati and a doctor of the church from Siena, Italy. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of St. Dominic. Our top story tonight, President Donald Trump calls it a historic peace summit. Two countries, Armenia and Azerbaijan, have been locked in a bitter conflict over territory for decades, a conflict that saw thousands of Christians forcibly displaced. Today, at the White House, all three leaders of each nation gathered for what the president said is an official peace signing ceremony. But there are still many concerns about what happens next, especially for the Christians in the region. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Monse, good evening to you. As President Trump works to seal yet another peace deal, this time between Armenia and Azerbaijan, he's being urged to help thousands of Christians return to their homes and protect their faith and heritage.
President Donald Trump welcomes the leaders of Armenia and Azerbaijan to the White House.
President Trump, sir, how confident are you there can be lasting peace between Armenia and Azerbaijan?
Very confident.
Does the deal today protect Christians?
The two nations have been locked in conflict for nearly four decades as they fought for control of the Karabakh region.
It's a long time, 35 years. They fought, and now they're friends, and they're going to be friends for a long time. But it's a big, beautiful honor to welcome everyone to the White House for this very historic peace summit between Armenia and Azerbaijan.
Known internationally as Nagorno-Karabakh, or Artsakh by Armenians, it was Armenian Christians who suffered persecution, human rights advocates, and U.S. lawmakers demanding their freedom and protection, and dignified return of forcibly displaced Armenians to their indigenous homeland of Nagorno-Karabakh. Dozens of congressmen recently writing, Azerbaijan's military assault on Nagorno-Karabakh in September 2023, coming in the wake of a 10-month blockade of food, fuel, medicine, and other humanitarian supplies, forcibly displaced the region's entire Christian Armenian population of 120,000 people, many of whom are now refugees in the Republic of Armenia. Just last year, President Trump tweeted, Kamala Harris did nothing as 120,000 Armenian Christians were horrifically persecuted and forcibly displaced in Artsakh. When I am president, I will protect persecuted Christians, I will work to stop the violence and ethnic cleansing, and we will restore peace between Armenia and Azerbaijan.
Committing to stop all fighting forever, open up commerce, travel, and diplomatic relations, and respect each other's sovereignty and territorial integrity. So importantly, and I just spent a lot of time with these two men. I think they're going to have a great relationship. You want to know the truth?
And later, the three leaders sign off on the peace deal. The agreement, according to officials, giving the U.S. leasing rights to develop the corridor and name it the Trump Route for International Peace and Prosperity.
Now, that transit corridor is eventually expected to include a rail line, oil and gas lines, fiber optic lines, allowing for the movement of goods and people. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you so much, Owen. Now for deeper analysis, we have Nadine Mayenza, co-chair of the International Religious Freedom Roundtable. Nadine, thank you for joining us. Last time we spoke, you were in Armenia. Tell me, what are your initial thoughts on today's deal?
Well, I'm surprised by the warmth that we saw between all the leaders today in the press conference, by the enthusiasm and by the confidence that this could be a lasting peace. I think that was a surprise considering how long and brutal this conflict has been.
Absolutely long and brutal. We saw some of the effects of that, and you were describing it for us when you were on our show a week ago. You mentioned that Armenia has been confronted by a genocidal intent for decades. Will this deal change that?
You know, that is the question that we're all asking, and we're all wanting to be optimistic, and we want peace. The people of Armenia want peace. The people of Azerbaijan want peace. And hopefully the U.S. will help them go through this process of working together. But there's still so many details that we haven't even talked about. How about the 23 prisoners of war that are still being held in Azerbaijan, including some of the former political leaders of Nagorno-Karabakh? The right of return question was asked to both leaders. Will the refugees be able to return to Nagorno-Karabakh? And both leaders didn't answer that question. I, while this was happening, heard from one of my colleagues on the trip that spoke to one of the political leaders in Armenia that said, you know, that they felt like that could be something that could be brought up later once this peace has been established, but they weren't panicking that no one answered the question. I think everyone understood they're not quite there yet.
But it's important to get there. What does it mean that the United States brokered this deal? Is there any kind of guarantee that now that the United States is involved, that Azerbaijan will be more or less likely to honor this peace deal?
Well, that's the question. We've seen agreements before, or ceasefires, for instance, in northeast Syria, where Turkey continued to shell day after day, and where everyone pretended like the ceasefire was a success. So the question is, will Azerbaijan be held accountable if they continue to shoot across the border as they do every night? Will they shoot tonight across the border and tomorrow night? We'll know pretty quickly if we see any sort of those kind of conflicts, and I hope that the U.S. won't turn away. I do know the U.S. is not providing hard security guarantees. This corridor is not a security one, it's an economic one. So there's going to be a lot of trust being given to Azerbaijan now. But this could be a win economically for both countries. Peace would be a win for both countries. So there's lots of good reasons why everyone should work together to make this peace last.
And are you hopeful then for the future of Christian Armenians and for the preservation of their heritage?
I'm hopeful for this country. They are on the right track. They're growing economically. They have so much potential. Highly educated, very cohesive, but they do have these threats that have been around them that have really been what's been interfering with their future. So if this could be what settles that for them so that they could live in this region without the persecution, without the threats from Russia, Iran on their border, or they already have tough neighbors. But of course, you know, Azerbaijan and Turkey has been the one that they've seen the most violence from. So if that could be settled and they could actually focus on developing their country and practicing their faith, it's embraced in such a beautiful way there. Pope Francis visited in 2016 to Armenia, and he actually went to the border of Turkey and he let doves go to think about what peace could mean. And I think he'd be really happy to know this peace agreement had been signed and that there is this potential for peace. And so for that reason, we have to be optimistic.
Well, we're hopeful because we're Christians. Thank you so much, Nadine. Really appreciate it. And we'll be watching for tonight's response from Azerbaijan. Thank you.
Thank you.
And in the Middle East, explosions in Gaza after Israel announces another major ground operation. As of right now, details of Israel's proposed takeover of Gaza City have not been announced. But Germany said today it would not authorize the export of military equipment that could be used in Gaza until further notice. Israeli Prime Minister says he only intends to get rid of Hamas, then hand over the region to others not bent on the destruction of Israel. President Trump says he will meet, quote, very shortly with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Today is the deadline, the White House said, for Russia to end its offensive in Ukraine. The president was asked directly if the deadline still applies.
It's going to be up to him. We're going to see what he has to say. It's going to be up to him. Very disappointed. Yeah.
Trump also says that Putin does not have to meet with Ukrainian leader Volodymyr Zelensky before meeting with President Trump. The White House says it will announce the location of the meeting with President Putin as soon as today. Redistricting wars for control of the U.S. House are heating up. The political and legal threats against Democrats who left Texas to protest a redrawn political map have gone further than many anticipated. Now, Texas Senator John Cornyn has requested the FBI step in and assist law enforcement in locating the members who left the state. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us with the latest. Eric, great to see you.
Hey, great to see you too, Monse. Within the last 24 hours, Texas Senator John Cornyn tells me that he heard back from FBI Director Kash Patel, and Patel has granted the request for the federal government to help locate those members of the Texas House of Representatives who fled the state. Cornyn adds what they did was, quote, shameful, and they decided to try and stop the legislative process, while Texas state Democrats, they're firing back.
What we're looking at is a governor who is conspiring with a disgraced president to use unconstitutional, illegal racial gerrymandering to destroy our communities.
State Representative Gene Wu is one of 50 who left Texas. State and U.S. Republicans are determined to bring them back. U.S. Senator John Cornyn said in a statement, quote, I thank President Trump and Director Patel for supporting and swiftly acting on my call for the federal government to hold these supposed lawmakers accountable for fleeing Texas. We cannot allow these rogue legislators to avoid their constitutional responsibilities. Democratic governors are not sitting idle. They say the FBI's authority is limited.
The reality is that all that he has said, Cornyn, is that the FBI has been authorized to locate the Texas House Democrats. Nothing more. And you know why? Because there is no federal law that allows them to arrest Texas Democrats who are here visiting the state of Illinois.
If Texas Republicans vote to adopt a new congressional map, California Governor Gavin Newsom, a Democrat, says his state will redraw its congressional districts as well.
That we cannot unilaterally disarm at this existential moment in terms of these congressional maps in 26, 28, and 30.
But House Speaker Mike Johnson, a constitutional lawyer, disagrees and says California could wind up in court.
It's up to each state to handle those things. Texas seems to have a good grasp on it. My understanding under California is they're not allowed to do that under state law.
Texas Republican Congressman Brian Harrison says the recent days have shown it is critical that Democrats don't win the midterms.
And we have the potential to add 5 seats, which could make or break the decision for whether or not the United States Congress falls to the radical leftist Marxist Democrats in the upcoming midterms. The stakes could never be higher.
And by the way, we have some late-breaking news. Attorney General Ken Paxton of Texas has now asked the state Supreme Court to remove 13 of the Democratic representatives who actually fled the state, he says, because they abandoned their seats. But the redistricting race may just be getting started. Florida announced that it's going to redraw its districts where Republicans could pick up at least 3 seats. And Republicans are also looking at gains in Missouri, Indiana, and Ohio, where state law mandates to redraw districts ahead of the 2026 midterms. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly. Monse.
Thanks so much, Eric. Well, a federal judge is set to hear a Trump administration request to end longstanding protections for immigrant children in U.S. custody. U.S. District Judge in Los Angeles will consider whether to dissolve the Flores Agreement, a nearly 30-year-old policy that limits how long children can be held by Customs and Border Protection. It also mandates safe, sanitary conditions with independent oversight. Advocates for immigrant children urge the court to keep the protections, citing troubling reports from detention centers. And a new report suggests President Trump has ordered the Pentagon to begin using military force against Latin American drug cartels deemed as terrorist organizations. The order would provide an official basis for the possibility of direct military operations at sea and on foreign soil against cartels. This comes as the president has already deployed the National Guard and active duty troops to stop drugs coming across the border. The administration has also stepped up its surveillance. We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly. Ignorant and evil. University of Nebraska is responding after the students mock the Holy Mass. And today marks a 2-year anniversary of the deadly wildfires in Hawaii. A story of one church that was miraculously spared right after the break. Marks the 2-year anniversary of the deadly wildfires in Hawaii. A new report says support for the survivors remains strong. The Hawaii Catholic Herald says the spire of Maria Lanakula Church serves as a beacon of hope for residents. The church was miraculously spared, even as properties around it were destroyed. The church has remained open, which one priest says brings a sense of normalcy and stability to the community. During the horrific blazes, more than 100 people died, and the beachfront town of Lahaina was destroyed. At least 10 people are dead and 33 missing after powerful flash floods swept through China's northwestern Gansu province. Days of heavy rain have triggered flooding and at least one landslide near the city of Lanzhou. More than 4,000 people across four villages were left without power and communication. Local officials report rainfall in the area reached nearly 8 inches by early Friday, with more rain possible. Now to the American Midwest and an important update after reports that graduate students at the University of Nebraska held a drag performance earlier this summer mocking the Catholic Mass. Bishop James Conley of the Diocese of Lincoln, Nebraska, says officials at the university apologized for the incident. They also established an advisory group that seeks to reduce or eliminate incidents like the mockery of the Mass. Bishop Conley says he's mostly pleased with the university's response. In a letter, he says in part, quote, "Mocking the Eucharist, which is the very source and summit of the Catholic faith, should never be an action that is rewarded with a degree, but instead should be condemned for its ignorance and evil." He adds, quote, "The university's response is a good start." Bishop Conley tells us his meetings with university leaders were very positive.
Yes, we discussed this panel that they're going to put together, which will have a broad representation, including a couple of priests will be on it as well. And I want them to follow up just to mainly for education, especially in all the different departments in the university, so that something like this won't happen again. That the sensitivity level, the people understand that, you know, those people of faith have very important and very sacred understanding of their faith, and that can't be a subject of any kind of mockery or even sacrilegious, demonstrations like this performance that was put on.
Bishop Conley also says there have been other incidents regarding the ridiculing of the faith on campus.
I don't know. I was told that there have been some other incidences, not with regard to the Catholic faith, but with other faith traditions, that there have been complaints, probably not unlike most universities. But as far as a snapshot of the University of Nebraska, it's about 25,000 students here on the Lincoln campus. And I'd say probably 20% are Catholic. We have a very active Newman Center, which is right on campus, and the Student Catholic Center is very strong. So we have a lot of Catholic life on the campus, and so that's why this was, I think it was such an important something for me to intervene with and to speak for the students, but also for Catholics across the state who support the university.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, a saintly friendship. As the church prepares to canonize Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati, we'll show you the special relationship he had with another saint who lived nearly 600 years before him. Plus, today is the feast of Saint Dominic, and we'll show you why his life is one that can inspire us all. Today, the church celebrates the feast of the saint who started one of the most recognizable religious orders today, Saint Dominic. Saint Dominic de Guzman was born in Castile, Spain, and became a priest at the cathedral at Osma. However, during a trip through France, he came face to face with the Albigensians, a heretical sect that denied church authority and the sacraments, and believed in a dualism between good and evil. Despite threats from the heretics and in a very violent time in southern France, Saint Dominic preached to the Albigensians and won many back to the faith. To help his labors, he formed a group of traveling preachers who also went among the heretics. That group went on to become the Great Order of Preachers, the Dominicans. Saint Dominic, pray for us. And on this Feast of St. Dominic, EWTN Vatican News correspondent Valentina Di Donato visits one of the great Dominican churches in Rome and tells us more about two lay Dominicans, one a saint and one soon to be canonized.
In nearly 1 month, Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati will be canonized in Rome. On the occasion of the Jubilee of Youth, his relics were brought from Turin to the Dominican Basilica of Santa Maria Sopra Minerva in Rome, for the first time for thousands of pilgrims to venerate. They were placed beside the remains of one of the greatest saints in the history of the Church, Saint Catherine of Siena.
It's so fascinating that the two are just side by side. Of course, they never encountered themselves physically because Frassati lived in the 20th century, so 600 years later, almost, than St. Catherine. But they had a spiritual connection. Also, the writings of Catherine inspired Frassati a lot. In fact, he decided to become a lay Dominican, just like Catherine, by reading her letters and her dialogue.
Both St. Catherine and Blessed Pier Giorgio were deeply formed by Dominican spirituality and joined the Dominican Third Order, which enables lay people to share in the mission and charism of the order. Brother Alessandro Monti tells us that St. Catherine the Mystic and Doctor of the Church, who famously persuaded Pope Gregory XI to return the papacy from Avignon to Rome, served as a strong inspiration for Pier Giorgio.
It's a powerful reminder of how saints keep inspiring other saints. And it's like a chain of holiness. It's like saying, look, by imitating her, I became a saint. So you should become a saint. And so inspiration, I mean, both of them died very young. That is also a powerful reminder of the fact that all our life is a preparation to heaven. If we are ready for heaven, then the Lord calls us. It's a mystery. But it's a reminder of the fact that we're made for eternity, really.
Fabio, like both St. Catherine of Siena and Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati, is also a member of the Lay Dominican Order. And he tells us how meaningful it has been to be able to venerate both together in the same church.
Yes, both are Dominicans, and so in some way I'm following their footsteps. And it's a beautiful moment to have them both together, two saints, two beacons of light for the Dominican Order.
In her final years, Catherine of Siena lived in a humble apartment near the Basilica to be close to the Dominicans. Devotion around the saint developed rapidly after her death, after which her body was moved inside the Basilica.
We have to understand the role of relics in the society of the Middle Ages and in the spiritual life of Christians in general. So for someone who belonged to that time and place, having a physical remnant of the body of the saint was something that helped people to obtain graces, health, even during her funeral and after the day of the funeral. So many people were sick, were healed thanks to, you know, St. Catherine. So physically being in touch with their body is, a vessel of grace.
In Rome, Valentina Di Donato for EWTN News Nightly.
We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Montse Alvarado. Good night, and God bless you.